Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westaver.
I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor, producer, wunderkind Tom Hanks, who was born in California to a hospital worker and an itinerant cook. But the marriage didn't work out, so he ended up spending his childhood with several step families. And interestingly about that, when he talks about his life as a child, he said he had all kinds of freedom to do whatever he wanted to do. And by the time he was in junior high, he was wandering around freely as much as he wanted to, a free spirit. And as to why his parents divorced, he said mostly because of money. They weren't well off, and neither one of them could deal with, you know, all the kids at the same time. Interestingly, though, his dad remarried and they moved to Reno. She had five kids of her own. Suddenly, it was like bang, zoom, there were eight kids around. We were total strangers, all thrust together. I remember in school, we had to draw a picture of our house and family, and I ran out of places to put people. I put them on the roof. I drew dad in bed sleeping, since he worked so hard in the restaurant. When his parents split up, I never saw those people again. And I find that fascinating, given that he went on to become Tom Hanks, that nobody who grew up with him and had to like share the bathroom and, you know, argue over who got the last crescent roll at Thanksgiving or whatever, that they would actually disappear from his life. I think that's a really interesting way to start off talking about him, especially since I think his career has depended on him sort of being this everyman. I think that's sort of an unusual start. But it certainly knocks the pins out from under, well, you must have had a charmed life, because clearly he did not. What do you think, Mike?
It's a really good observation. When you think about his actual early life, the parents divorcing, somewhat unstable in a way, not having those firm connections, that solid background, maybe that's why, and this is armchair psychoanalysis, but maybe that's why later in life, it's meant so much to him to have stability, to be reliable. He's one of those actors that we can depend on. And in his private life as well, there was an early marriage which ended in divorce. So that's sort of recapitulating the parents, I guess, in some ways. But then when he married Rita Wilson in 1988, I think it was. Anyway, that marriage has lasted. It's that rare thing in Hollywood, a long and happy marriage, right? And how often they appear together, you know, whether it's talk shows, joint interviews, whatever. But I mean, they are a couple, right? It's not, you don't need the reminding that they're married. You oftentimes will just have that simply in the media coverage of them. So I think that's a really astute observation, that his is a case where, for all that early insecurity, if you will, kind of bumping around, that you know, later in life, not only as a movie star, but in the personal life, things really did settle down for him. And he's not at the end yet, but there's that happy ending feeling, isn't there? So Marie, let me hand it back to you, because then we can start to talk about, as he's growing up and going through school, which of course becomes college, how that's going to lead to an acting career, initially really as a theater actor. But let me hand it back to you.
Well, I also want to mention, for everybody who's had to do these kinds of jobs that weren't born as movie stars, that some of his jobs included selling popcorn and peanuts as a teenager at the Oakland Coliseum. And he once worked as a hotel bellman. Some of his celebrity guests whose bags he carried were Cher, Sidney Poitier, and Bill Withers. So I like including that little detail, because it's such a average guy kind of thing to have to do. And then, you know, he said he tried out for drama in high school, you know, didn't make it. I mean, in terms of like early promise, like people who are born knowing that they are going to be musicians because they've got that talent, or they're very outgoing. Like we talked about Jim Carrey. I mean, everybody knew Jim Carrey was funny and a comedian, you know, his entire life. It was not a surprise. Tom Hanks sort of seems to have had just a regular person's life, and then ended up, to his surprise and everyone else's, becoming really, really famous. I do want to mention that there is this wonderful article on the New York Times that he wrote called "I Owe It All to Community College," because he did go to community college for a stint. And, you know, he said he was not a great student, and he did all the things all students do, you know, eating French fries, looking at girls. But he mentions these teachers that he had who sort of opened his mind to, you know, the big questions in life and challenged him to learn things, read things that he might not have. And so he says that, you know, whenever he drives by that college, which is still there, he points it out to his kids and says, "That place made me what I am today." have to get that in there because, of course, you know, we work at a community college.
We have to get that in there. And it's further proof that you can get there from here, you know, and he was able to do that. So it's inspirational. And we take all the credit for his success in his showbiz career.
Absolutely. Well,
go ahead. Talk about his college education a bit more, because that's significant in terms of acting.
Oh, in what way do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, and this is sort of, for me, something I've been thinking a lot about, you know, we do so many shows about movie stars, and we tend, you know, we teach film and we talk about it endlessly, right? So we tend to think of people like being fully sprung as great movie actors. Of course, with our program, Ray and I are always talking about film acting, but, you know, all these reminders, I have to remind myself as much as anyone else that so many of these actors have strong theater backgrounds. In the case of Tom Hanks, you know, I had some interest in theater in high school. It's really in college at California State University, where he's a drama major, where it really takes off. And then from there, he really begins his professional career, but again, in live theater, initially with the Great Lakes Shakespeare Festival, which is near Cleveland, Ohio. You know, you don't usually think of the names Tom Hanks and William Shakespeare in the same sentence. And yet, you know, he really does those classical roles. And that's where you learn on your feet, not just the metrical feet of you know, dialogue and so on, but you really learn to respond in the moment. And that helps any actor, whether on stage or on a film set. From there, he moves to New York City. It's, you know, you're at that age, you know, early 20s and all, that's the move to make. And he works with the Riverside Theater Company, which actually was a fairly significant company in New York. And so again, just as a reminder that he comes to this career with a strong theater background, and this precedes the work in television, which is then going to kind of jumpstart him into a film career. But again, it's a career trajectory that a lot of actors, particularly of his generation, have had.
You know, interestingly, you know, we always like to talk about where we came across this actor for the first time. And for me, it was the TV show Bosom Buddies, which was on the air from 1980 to 1982, in which he and Peter Scolari play two guys who, you know, spend the whole show in drag, you know, pretending that they are a gay couple. And I remember when it came out, it was funny and it did really well. And I remember him, but I remember him sort of playing second banana to Peter Scolari. I didn't think he was the star. But then he would go on to do a one-shot guest appearance on Happy Days. And producer Ron Howard asked him to read for a secondary role in Splash from 1984. He thought he might do the John Candy role. And instead, Tom Hanks got the lead. And I think that's just where everything just took off. And by the way, I loved him in Splash. I think that was a great, funny movie. And honestly, I don't know if we would have as many women named Madison today if it wasn't for that movie.
I've had so many students named Madison. Now I know the origin of this. But Marie, just to bolster one of the points you're making, Bosom Buddies, you know, it was only on the air, what, a couple seasons, a few seasons, but he got some notice there. But second banana, you're right. And the reason I mention it and kind of ride along with that comment is he wasn't one of these people who immediately became a star. I mean, he's sort of like a, you know, a strong support. And then his first movie actually was a horror film, a slasher film called He Knows You're Alone in 1980, which I saw. There's no reason to mention it otherwise. You know what I mean? He's just in one of those, like, you know, teen slasher movies. And then even like a few years later, A Bachelor Party in 1984, he's doing some kind of routine Hollywood features, not really what you'd call movie star material yet. But Marie, the reason I underscore that is you're absolutely right. Splash, it's a terrible pun, but it is kind of a splash that way. It really does put him, I think, on the radar. And, you know, he's not a huge movie star at that point, but he's a name. He becomes a name. People recognize him. It leads to better roles, basically, and certainly more roles. So let me hand it back to you. What are some of the things about Splash that you want to, you know, additionally say? Because it is actually a film that got a lot of comment when it came out. People noticed it and they still remember it.
It's a wonderful fairy tale because it's about a young man who meets a mermaid when he's very, very small. And then later she comes back and he's able to, like, see her again. And then by the end of the movie, he has to decide, is he going to live on land or join her under the sea? I mean, it's a fairy tale. But what's wonderful about it in terms of Tom Hanks having that role is it's a perfect Tom Hanks role. You know, they say he's like, you know, the new Jimmy Stewart, that ordinary guy. And he's perfect in that role. He's perfect as the ordinary guy. Everybody can relate to him. Everybody understands his struggle to, you know, discover how to be with this half woman, half fish. It brought Daryl Hannah, you know, it was a splash for her as well. It's even a good John Candy movie. You know, it works on a lot of levels. I mean, it's Ron Howard. So it has that heart at the center of it. And then of course he would go on to do Big, which I think is like the perfect follow-up to Splash, because it's again a very relatable character. There's never a moment in that movie when you're not completely on his side.
I wondered how many minutes we'd be into the episode before I heard the name Jimmy Stewart, because it's impossible to talk about Tom Hanks without making that comparison. Mm-hmm. Look at any information on the actor, biographical sketches, interviews, whatever, it always comes up, as it should, because it seems to me that like each generation has an actor, or at least one actor, who kind of fills that role. Sometimes you're blessed with, you know, Denzel Washington, other, you know, you can mention a few actors who have those qualities. This is something that's easily noticed and not always as easily defined verbally. In other words, why, in terms of actors with integrity, reliability, likability, some people have it and some don't, right? And you can be a really gifted actor, but people say, yeah, you know, he's a great actor, but you don't get that warm and fuzzy feeling, right? It's certainly with Jimmy Stewart and also with Tom Hanks. And even though I'm not the biggest Tom Hanks fan in the world, and we can talk about that presently, I've always acknowledged that quality that he has. And I might as well then just cut to that. I remember when Big came out, a big commercial hit, because, and it shows actually his versatility as an actor, you know, that, you know, what your actual age is as an actor, but then, you know, the character you become, if you will, you know, playing different ages, if you will. I liked the film well enough. I was not a huge fan of it. And let me fess up right now. In a lot of his roles, particularly the comic roles, there's, for me, a near cloying quality. I like him, but sometimes the sentiment on the sleeve, if you will, the twinkle in the eye, the likability factor, sometimes for me, it just pushes it a little far, a little mushy, a little sentimental that way. And maybe that's just confessing my own preference for harsh and cynical films. It could be that, but I do think even when I like him in a role, sometimes I think like he's just pushing it a bit far. But let me actually undercut partly what I just said, and that even though I think in a lot of the comic roles, actually, when we did a show the other month about Jim Carrey, this came up in my discussion as well, where it's like, yeah, he's funny, but he's sort of like pushing it. He's just like sort of in your face with it. There are times with Tom Hanks where I sort of feel that way. And it's not a major hangup for me. It's just that, you know, I'm not his biggest fan, quite honestly, but I, you know, respect him. I admire what he does. To partly undercut myself, in terms of versatility, he's best known early on for sure in roles like Big. That Splash did make a splash. It made an impression, but it was Big in 1988. That really put him over the top in one of the major movie stars. But I want to talk about a film between those. Splash comes out in 84, Big in 88. In 1986, he made a film called Nothing in Common, in which he has a dramatic role. And indeed, Jackie Gleason, somebody mostly known for comic roles himself, plays his father. And I'm not saying it's a great film, but what it proved was that Tom Hanks could play it straight. He could play in a straight drama. And again, I don't want to force comparisons with Jim Carrey whatsoever, but actors who are known pretty much for lightweight, romantic, goofy comedy, whatever, that they could do dramatic roles as well. So what I'm saying in short, which for me is always in long, what I'm saying in long is that by the late 80s, you have Tom Hanks proving himself in the comic roles for which he's best known, but also some dramatic roles as well. And, you know, all props there, all respect for what he's able to do with that.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into 1992's A League of Their Own. You know, what I think is, you know, in terms of Bosom Buddies, Splash, Big, and then A League of Their Own. Those are the, I think, the underpinnings of his career, the things he's most known for, especially for that line in A League of Their Own. There's no crying in baseball.
You know what, Marie, you're absolutely right about League of Their Own. I mean, he does really well in that. I mean, but what I want to quickly interject is, even though we've talked about him in the late 80s becoming major star, even major stars have their ups and downs, their dips, if you will. Again, back to Jimmy Stewart. When you look at the complete filmography for an actor like Jimmy Stewart, I mean, Stewart's case back in the classic studio era, dozens of movies, right? But you'll reach a stretch sometimes, like a few year period, where you look at, you maybe you've seen the films, maybe not, but you realize this wasn't a great stretch for him. What happened? You know what I mean? I mean, various things to factor in. But something like that happened to Tom Hanks. He was becoming a major star in the late 80s. Something in the very late 80s, early 90s, he made some forgettable and unsuccessful at the box office films, which we tend to gloss over now. So I'll just very quickly give the titles here from the late 80s, early 90s. The Burbs, Turner and Hooch, Bonfire of the Vanities, Joe Versus the Volcano and Radio Flyer. Let me single out Joe Versus the Volcano. It's really it's a mediocre to poor film. And it just goes to prove that, you know, as gifted an actor as Tom Hanks, you appear in a turkey once in a while or even have a stretch of a few years. He wasn't quite box office poison because enough of these films had commercial viability, but critically was getting so-so reviews. Commercially, not great, but, you know, getting roles. And yet, you know, he's had a kind of resilience. Some actors would have just sort of gone into a tailspin at that point, right? But Tom Hanks, you're absolutely right. It's actually League of Their Own in 1992, Marie, where I think if we talk about actors having various acts in their careers, this is the next act or next phase, because then as you get into the early 90s, he has a terrific run. Well, and you know, this happens to actors and directors all the time, right? You have a great run, a great streak. Who can, baseball players too, right? Who can fully account for this? Speaking of League of Their Own, you know, you have a great run. So what else would you like to say about that period? Because we need to talk obviously about Sleepless in Seattle. And, you know, in addition to League of Their Own, that's early 90s where he really does bounce back strong here.
Well, actually, I have a quote from him where he says, "I've made over 20 movies and five of them are good." Right. So when I was making a list of, you know, the movies we should discuss from Tom Hanks, there's way too many for us to really get into any sort of detail about, but I've got them grouped as things. So I'm going to give you a group of movies. You're going to pick the one that you think is the best of that group. And we'll talk very briefly about it, you know, so we don't run out of time. So
how many points are attached to each one? And when's my deadline? And how's it going to affect my GPA? But go ahead.
Okay, the first is what I consider to be his iconic roles. And there are three of my favorite movies that he's in, and probably most people's. One is The Green Mile from 1999. The second is Saving Private Ryan from 1998. And the third is Forrest Gump, 1994. Go, which one's the best?
Saving Private Ryan, okay. Easily answered. But this might be the place to talk about Forrest Gump in the sense that this is the early 90s when he really hits it big commercially and critically. You know, Sleepless in Seattle is a very popular film. It still is, right? People, you know, it's something you might want to watch, you know, if not once a year, at least occasionally. But that same year in 1993, he does one of his best roles, Philadelphia. I think that's one of his strongest performances. He plays a gay lawyer dying of AIDS. Again, earlier I mentioned his dramatic skill, that he can do that. I mean, he has that drama training and you see it in some of the movies. That's a really good film. And indeed, you know, he wins the Academy Award for Best Actor. He has that rare distinction of winning back-to-back Academy Awards in 1993 for Philadelphia, the following year in 1994, Forrest Gump. To cut to the chase on this, and very few, the only previous actor who had done that was Spencer Tracy back in 1937, 38. That's how long a gap there was. So to win back-to-back Academy Awards as Best Actor, that's remarkable. But to cut to the chase quite readily and vociferously here, I really like Philadelphia. I think it's a really, and John Demme, the director, is just really well made. He has such a strong performance in it. And I really don't like Forrest Gump. And I know that what's awkward for me is over the years, I've had many students who've written essays about Forrest Gump because they've selected it as a topic. And I always try to be objective and grade it based on, you know, and respect their opinions and how much they love it. And I remember once, this is years ago, can I make a confession that's out of the classroom? I was teaching a film history class once, Marie, and it was a survey. We were watching all the great Hollywood movies. I mean, if you looked at the syllabus, it was Casablanca, it was Double Indemnity, it was The Searchers, Some Like It Hot, you know, like on and on, just fill in the blanks, like certified classics, right? Top 10 stuff. And at the end of the semester, a student was doing an evaluation for it and, you know, acknowledged that we watched some pretty good movies, you know, the all-time great classics, pretty good movies. He said, but nothing great like Forrest Gump. And it was all I could do to, like, I kept my poker face and just, okay, I'm reading the comments. Okay, well, we all have different tastes. But for me, earlier I mentioned with Tom Hanks, there is sometimes that saccharine sentiment on the sleeve, like me quality, twinkle in the eye, you know, right to the camera kind of sensibility. It's a bit much for me. And honestly, in terms of personal taste, I've never liked Forrest Gump. I mean, I watched it when it first came out and every minute of it, but just as Forrest Gump, you know, is known to run, the moment the credits ended, I was running out of the theater. You know, I wanted to get away from Forrest Gump. And I readily confess that I'm in a minority there. I mean, he wins the Academy Award Best Actor. The student I mentioned, many students, actually, many people I know love that film. And that's why I have to be a polite gentleman and just sit back and say, well, it wasn't my cup of tea and leave it at that. But all those personal observations aside, that's such a golden moment for him, literally in terms of winning a statuette, you know, to have Philadelphia and Forrest Gump both win him that Oscar. You're riding high there. What's remarkable for him is not just that he had that moment or that 2-year stretch, but that he makes some other really strong films, Marie. And that's what you were alluding to before when you had those clumps or clusters of them. Because, you know, we're going to lead up to Saving Private Ryan. There have been some really, really great roles for him since then.
Thank you for mentioning Philadelphia, because that should have been, you know, that grouping. I had it in a different grouping. Tom Hanks playing real life people, because I assumed that even if that wasn't based on a real life person, it's close enough to a lot of actual situations that it qualified. But I just want to put in a plug for The Green Mile, because as I agree with you, Saving Private Ryan is the winner. But The Green Mile, he's just so perfect for that role. You know, it's a Stephen King story. It's a wonderfully shot movie. And he just brings the humanity that makes him so likable in all of his roles. So here's the next grouping, Mike. These are all the roles he has played somebody, a real life person. Sully from 2016, Saving Mr. Banks, 2013, Captain Phillips, 2013, Apollo 13, 1995, and The Post, 2017. Which one's the winner?
You know what? I almost want to say this is cheating a bit, but almost like a tie between Sully and Captain Phillips, because they're similar roles in a way where, you know, you're an airline pilot and there's an emergency in the air and what are you going to do? Or Captain Phillips, you know, you're on a ship that's been hijacked, whatever. I think it is fair to talk about them in the same breath, and that you want somebody really, really capable and really reliable at the wheel and in the pilot seat, whatever. I'm filling the blank there, wherever you're sitting at, you know, as you get through the movie. But joking aside on that, one of his great virtues as an actor is he can take that seat. Yeah, if anyone's going to get you out of the crisis, he will, right? And one of the strong marks, and again, even though I've not always liked some of the films he's most famous for, those are films I do like quite a bit, because you know what? In a film like that, when you have sufficient gravitas as an actor, and frankly, when you have the kind of professional baggage that you carry with you at that point, there's a likability. Again, back to Jimmy Stewart. You know, Jimmy Stewart sometimes could play characters later in his career who weren't all that likable, who were deeply flawed. Let's put it that way. When you start with some of the great Hitchcock roles like Rear Window, Vertigo, whatever, his character's got some flaws and some things that are almost borderline creepy, whatever, but he's the protagonist. You like him, you're with him. So in the case of Hanks, he typically does play people you like. Usually these protagonists are, you know, entirely good, if you will. But the point I'm making here is simply that when he's in a fix like that, whatever the situation is, we like him so much from all those previous roles. Yes, even for most people, Forrest Gump, you know, we like him for all those roles. And so we bring that with us as a positive association. It doesn't mean that as an actor, he's coasting, but what it means is he's got an advantage inherently. That the moment you put that uniform on him and say, okay, now you're the captain of a ship. Okay, now you're an airline pilot. Before you even have a line of dialogue, don't you know the moment that he comes on screen, the very first scene, what are you thinking? You think, oh, good, Tom Hanks. It's warm and fuzzy. You almost want to have like that proverbial mug of hot chocolate as you sit down to watch the movie, right? That's what really, you know, carries you with him. So Marie, you know, if I had to, you know, push come to shove, I'd say maybe Captain Phillips then, because I know I shouldn't cheat and say two films. I'll give one.
Well, see, I'm going to cheat and then pick two other films that I think tie. Saving Mr. Banks, I absolutely love him as Walt Disney, and I love that movie. And also, I should have mentioned A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, where he plays Mr. Rogers. I think he did a great job with those two. Okay, quick, between the kid stuff, Polar Express from 2004, Cars 2006, Toy Story 1995, which one was the best?
Well, again, not being a kid, but projecting back to my youth. No, but I mean, jesting aside there, I mean, those are all enjoyable films. I would probably say Toy Story, and of course, its many sequels. I mean, it's an enjoyable film, but for our purposes at the moment, voice talent in animation is a fascinating topic. We should do a show just on that sometime. But in this case, there's certain voices you immediately recognize. And again, that kind of likability. The moment you hear that voice, isn't it reassuring? And again, you can be a kid of any age and you think that's Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. And even I go for the warm and fuzzy on that. That's Tom Hanks. And he's such a nice guy and this and that. Boy, I'll tell you, that really helps when you're watching the film. That not just that you actually recognize the voice, but again, that kind of reliability with vocal talent. So I'll vote for Toy Story.
All right. That's a good one. So, you know, going through the Harvey Weinstein era, you know, Tom Hanks has kind of emerged as the one to save movies in terms of that. And I say that because my nephew said after one person after another seemed to go down with the Harvey Weinstein scandal, he said, are we just going to end up, we're just going to let Tom Hanks do all the movies? you know, he's been really lucky in that he has not had anything terrible like that happen. All right. So quick round robin for what I consider not bad movies, but certainly not his best. Each one of these had its moments. All right. Hologram for a King, 2016. Bridge of Spies, 2015. Larry Crown, 2011. Castaway, 2000. Cloud Atlas, 2012. News of the World, 2020, and Greyhound, 2020. Those last two actually had some nominations for this last group of Oscars, did not win, but it still had Tom Hanks in them or associated with them. What was the best one?
It's worth pointing out that Tom Hanks has made 5 movies with Steven Spielberg. Nice pairing there. Speaking of reliability, you know, and I really, really like what they've done together. Of the group you offered me, I'd say Bridge of Spies. I'll tell you why. The film had good reviews, respectful reviews, did moderate box office business, just kind of came and went. I think it's one of Spielberg's underappreciated films. It's exceptionally well made. It's really a good Cold War drama. And, you know, Tom Hanks is so good in it. Again, you know, put him in any uniform, you know, he really plays it convincingly and just like the guy. And that makes a difference in one of these spy versus spy stories, like who you want to identify with. So that's an easy answer for me. I mean, there's merit in the other films you mentioned, but if I have to pick one, I'd pick Bridge of Spies.
I'm with you on that. All right, I'm just going to give our listeners a quick list of things he has produced, including That Thing You Do in 1996, which gave him the name of Playtone, his production company. Mamma Mia, 2008. My Big Fat Greek Wedding in 2002. Olive Kittredge, 2014. Game Change, 2012, one of my favorite movies. The John Adams series in 2008, and Band of Brothers from 2001. I also want to mention that to Australians, a friend of mine there said, he's the canary who, you know, let everyone know he had contracted COVID and that, you know, he was getting treatment and, you know, he was the face of, you know, a famous person, you know, who had come down with this thing. So thanks, Tom Hanks, for, you know, being there to show us the way in so many different ways. I want to leave with this particular quote about what he said about turning 60 and what his advice would be to his younger self. Floss, do something about your blood sugar now, you idiot, and just learn how to relax. And on that, we will close out this show. Don't forget to check out our other episodes of At the Movies with Mike and Marie at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
See you there.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.